This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. At the bottom of the hour, I am going to be talking to Joey Hartstone about his fabulous new book called The Local. It is a legal thriller, and I love legal thrillers. But I also love romances, and so I am so happy to welcome to Joy on Paper somebody I've been looking forward. I actually missed her one day because of a problem, but I am so happy that she was able to join me today because I think her book is absolutely delightful. Stacy Gold has written a book called Wild at Heart, and it is so refreshing, and it was just such fun to read it. I'm so happy to welcome you to Joy on Paper, Stacy.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, you know, as somebody who was actually raised in a forest, I just appreciate this book so much, and I'm so happy that you're writing about something that is so joyous, and so few people really get this chance to get out there and be with nature.
I know. It's so true. And I think it's getting, you know, less and less common for people to really get out there and spend time in nature and feel comfortable out there.
That's true. People who have been raised in the city, they are frightened. I mean, they really are of going out there. And, of course, now this book is what you've written is absolutely, I think it's so great. The idea is so clever. But it all comes really back to this being able to be out there in nature. That people don't realize when you live in the city that it all smells different out there.
It does. I mean, everything is so different about it. And it's strange to me when I hear someone say, oh, I hate being out in nature. I hate being in the woods. And I'm thinking, I don't know that you really do. I mean, go to New York City on any reasonably nice day, and everyone is on the little postage stamp pieces of grass trying to get their little tiny dose of nature. And I think it's just the discomfort of people not having spent a lot of time out there. It's not that they hate it. They just don't know it. So they're not comfortable, and that's frightening for them, which, of course, is part of what I deal with in the book.
Exactly. And that's the wonderful thing, really, for people who are particularly this generation, they are so always connected to some electronic device. They can't get away from it. And then to get out there and to, I hope, and I think it will actually, your book will encourage people to get out there. So let's talk about this idea, this concept. You know, I thought it was so clever and so cute. Now, you've taken your interest in camping, and you've turned this into a novel. And the combination of coming out with this idea, really a baker's dozen. I love this whole finally, number 13. Explain the concept of the story and your main character, because I think it's just very clever.
Oh, well, thank you. I so appreciate that. And the basic premise of this story, while it is a romance novel, it's very outdoorsy, and it's kind of a modern-day flip on what we usually consider the typical damsel-in-distress-style romance. Instead, I end up with what some of my readers have taken to calling a manzel in distress, because the woman actually rescues the guy in this. And the premise is that the heroine, Jules, has just had a horrible run of dating. 12 guys in a row have left her and gone back to their ex-girlfriend. On top of that, yeah, horrifying.
It is. When I read that, when I got to that, I thought that was so I thought that was so funny.
I know, but it totally would make you be like, okay, I'm just done. This isn't working for me, right? And then on top of that, she has her own business as a graphic designer, and she's at that state where anyone who's had a business that was successful as a solo entrepreneur knows, at a certain point, you have to decide, do I hire more people? Do I quit taking clients? I can't keep working like this. So she decides she's going to do what she loves and spend 5 weeks backpacking her favorite stretches of the Pacific Crest Trail through Washington. She's a very experienced backpacker. She leads trips for a group that takes kids into the outdoors. So this is her happy place. And she gets out there and runs into Evan, our hero. And he grew up in a wealthy family in Boston and has recently lost his job, which he hated anyway, broke up with his fiance, basically just realized he's not happy in his life at all, but he doesn't know what else to do. And the last time he remembers being happy was camping as a kid with scouts. So he goes and buys all the latest gear and he decides to fly to Washington and do a week-long speed hike of one section of the PCT. And he's an athlete. He's a triathlete. So he's thinking, I can do this. This won't be hard. You know, the mileage will be easy for me. I run all the time. And gets out there and basically discovers he has no clue what he's doing and almost gets himself killed a couple times and might have died out there if it wasn't for Jules coming to his rescue.
Well, the premise was great. The idea of it was great. And then when you get running with it and having fun with it, it's something that you will just draw the reader into this story. I so enjoyed all the aspects of it, but I love the talk of nature because I wish more people would understand and would have that feeling. My whole childhood was spent really running around, and if I wasn't running around, I was reading a book under a tree. So, you know,
yeah.
I have that.
That was pretty much me. Share that.
That was my life. My entire summer was that. I remember in the morning, the screen door, you know, closing behind me. I had my peanut butter and jelly sandwich and, you know, some peanut butter cookies. And I was off for the day. And my mom didn't know where the heck I was because I was out there just having fun.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I grew up running around in the woods, wading in creeks and climbing trees and, you know, riding my bike around, all that kind of stuff. I've always loved being in the outdoors. I mean, as a kid, very young, I realized that's my happy place. That's where I feel best. That's where I'm the best version of me. And that has never changed. And I ended up centering quite literally my entire adult life around the outdoors.
So when you, explain what you became.
Initially, my first great outdoor job was as a whitewater raft guide on the Ocoee River in Tennessee. And that opened up for me the whole world of being a seasonal worker and being able to be a raft guide in the summer and a ski bum in the winter. Then I finished my degree at Colorado State University in recreation resource management and environmental education and spent 6 seasons working with the Forest Service as a backcountry ranger, a river ranger, and a ranger naturalist. And then I've also worked for a nonprofit mountain biking organization. And even during the period of time where I tried to sort of do a real job and I had my own marketing firm and wrote a lot of marketing copy, catalog copy, website content, that sort of thing, I was always working for outdoor businesses. I've worked for REI, I've worked for Eddie Bauer, GSI, MSR, you know, all kinds of different companies, mostly with acronyms.
And
so, yeah, I've really just tried to keep it going and stay in the outdoors as much as I can.
Well, it's wonderful. And I love, you know, when I was a kid, it was such a wonder for me to be able to just be one with the forest and with the animals and with having just adventures. My mind was always just I was so thrilled all the time. I look back now at my childhood and I realize my summers particularly, because that's the time I was out, you know, out of school and outdoors, I was a different person. And it really is true that it makes you a different person.
It does. And what's interesting to me looking back, because of course it was, you know, all the neighborhood kids, we all ran around in the woods together. And it was boys and girls. I never really thought a thing about the fact that I was a girl out there. And then when I started trying to do more in the industry, the fact that I was a woman made things much more difficult. And I got a lot of, you can't do this. You should just go back to the shopping mall. You know, this isn't for you. This isn't what women do. You'll never meet a man doing these kind of things, because this isn't what women do. It's not very feminine of you. And I just kind of ignored it all, because I knew deep down that's what made me happy. And so I hope that this book not only encourages lots of people to get in the outdoors, as you said, but encourages more women to get out there and realize they're perfectly capable and competent of doing any of these things in the outdoors.
Exactly. When I was young, I never thought I was any different from any of the boys. You know, they were running around. I was running around. I did everything they did. If they jumped over logs, I jumped over logs. You know, it was so free, and it was such a happy time. I can see that when, you know, you got into this industry, and I don't know, what is wrong with people? You know, get over all this nonsense. And I think that's the nice thing about this book. I mean, as you said, it is an empowering book for women. They'll read it and they'll say, yeah, you know, I can do that. I can, you know, whatever, you know, is necessary. When you look back on it, and the pioneer women were amazing what they could do, right?
And yeah.
So we can do it. It's just a matter of feeling, you know, getting that level of confidence. And I think this book will help.
Well, and I love hearing that you feel that way about the book, too. And I also really help on the not just outdoorsy side, that flipping the script like this and having the woman rescue the man. You know, for me, I first tried to read romance novels back in the mid-80s as a teenager. And even back then, I never wanted a guy to come rescue me. I never felt like a damsel in distress. And I was perfectly happy to never get married or, you know, any of that, because I wasn't willing to give up my autonomy and, you know, downplay my capabilities or any of that. And luckily, I eventually found a guy that I met while whitewater kayaking. We've been together 24 years now, but he fully supports me. He'll follow me on crazy adventures that I plan without a question. And I just think what we're looking for, I think there's a percentage of us, the fantasy isn't a guy to swoop in and rescue us and take us out of our lives and, you know, they're wealthy and they'll just give us money and do everything. I really think for many of us, the fantasy is just to find a guy who will support us, who will see how awesome we are and want to be a part of that and want to help us achieve our goals. And that was a really important part for me in writing that story, is that Evan can totally shelve his ego when he realizes he's almost gotten himself killed and she knows what she's doing. He is more than happy to listen to her advice.
Yeah.
You know, he wants her help with what he's trying to do because he sees that she's the expert and he's not.
Well,
I just think that's so important.
It is, and I loved it. And I think from my childhood of having this wonderful childhood of running wild and never, ever feeling like, you know, I was weaker than any of the boys that were running out there, too. As I grew up and I grew older and I you know, went out in the world, I stayed strong. I opened my own businesses. I opened, I had, you know, my own companies. I was always very strong, and as you were lucky, I also was lucky to find a guy who, yeah, you know, you're good at that, and do it.
Right? How can I help you? What can I do to support you?
Yeah, you know, there's fascinating dynamics here. And I think that women who read this book will also realize that, yeah, you can be assertive, but there's also this wonderful joy of just finding somebody that you can love.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that, for me, is why I love writing romance. Because deep down, don't we all want somebody who looks at us and thinks, oh my gosh, you're the most wonderful, amazing person ever, and I adore you. You know, warts and all, your foibles, your weird stuff, your baggage, whatever. Because we all have it. And writing romance is so lovely because it lets you take people from a place of not feeling able to be loved, not feeling capable of giving love or receiving it in any way. And by the end, they're there and they found somebody who makes them feel special.
And you get the fun of incorporating all of your camping experiences and some very fascinating ones. Tell us some of your adventures in camping, and not necessarily just in the book, but some of your more adventurous aspects of camping.
Sure. Well, you know, getting my start as a backcountry ranger means very early on, I had actually only been backpacking a couple times when I got that job, but I had spent a good bit of time in the outdoors, canoeing and sea kayaking and bike trips and different things. So all of a sudden there I was, you know, backpacking solo in the Colorado Rockies. And I remember one of my early trips, I was way up, getting almost into the high alpine, just outside Rocky Mountain National Park. And I heard this sound, this rumbling, this kind of, the sound you can feel, like when a train is coming. And I'm thinking, what the heck is this? I mean, I'm up at like 11,000 feet. I haven't seen anybody in a day. And it gets louder and louder, and the vibrations increase. And I turn and look behind me, and a herd of at least 60 elk came barreling down the mountainside 30 yards back.
Wow.
It was so awe-inspiring and so amazing. And one of those moments that I really relish where you realize how small you are. That you're just like you're a tiny speck on the planet. And these things are so much bigger. So that was a really early one. More recently, I had the great pleasure of finally, after 30 years of trying, I kayaked the Grand Canyon.
Oh, wow.
Yes, it was 12 and a half days, 236 miles, and we did not have any rafts on our trip. It was 14 people in kayaks, so everything had to go in your own kayak. So it's basically like backpacking down a river, but everything's in your boat.
Well, you certainly have found the joy of being outdoors. I was, we were talking, and I was thinking about your book. You know, being raised in you know, the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, of course, I learned to fish. I was fishing before I could actually walk. My dad already had a pole in my hand. And the first time I brought my husband to Michigan, and I took him fishing. He had never fished. And he was, I mean, he had never fished. And he was so surprised because, you know, we lived in Europe and there were opportunities for him to see that I could fish. You know? And he was enthralled at my expertise, you know. He didn't know I could fish and that I could, you know, I was an angler and that I knew all about it and how I could actually catch a fish. Well, you know, I taught him and he turned out he loved being able to fish. And he was always so grateful that I would know something like that, that he had, you know, he was an aeronautical engineer. He was a pilot. He was, you know, a lot of things, but he had never done that. And that gave him such a kick.
Isn't that great? And I just love that he looked at you and said, how cool, show me.
Exactly, exactly. And I think that's, I hope that people will, you know, there are so many different organizations now where you can, you know, go camping safely and where women can camp together and you know, it can be a safe thing. What do you recommend for any woman who gets inspired by this book? How should she approach it?
I definitely recommend exactly what you're saying. When I first got started really doing bigger adventures on my own, I didn't know anybody else who did it. So I found a group through my university. And that's how I got started and got to go canoe the Okefenokee Swamp for a week and a whole bunch of other really cool trips. So I do recommend finding local organizations. You can also start with REI. REI offers classes and trips. And in fact, I have a blog post up on my website that lists links to a number of different organizations for women and people in general. That's at stacygold.com/going-solo. And that's a great way to get started because you can go by yourself to join a group.
Yes.
And then that way you're kind of bridging the gap and you get some more experience. And that's exactly how I got the experience to become a Forest Service Ranger.
And you make friends. It's amazing. As a result of my teaching my husband how to fish. Now, next thing we know, he's inviting our Israeli friends to join us up north and then later on in Quebec and other places. I think he was proud to show them that I could fish and that I could teach them to fish because Israelis don't fish. You know,
No.
So it was so funny. It became something, a big sort of a group of us that all became friends just because I knew how to fish. I was the first one in the group to know how to fish.
Oh, I love it.
So, you know, you can make lifelong friends by getting, certainly when you're out in the wild and you have adventures, they stay with you for a lifetime and you make really great friends. You can talk, sit over a beer and talk about them for many years to come.
Well, it's so true. And, you know, the best memories are really made when things don't go exactly right. Those are the things we look back on and laugh about, or occasionally when things go so more incredibly right than you expected. But, like, who really remembers 5 years from now that time I sat on the couch and watched a TV show?
Exactly. And it's not something that you're going to live over and over in your mind. You know, when you're 60 and 70 and 80 and you're still having fun, and because you've been outdoors and you've probably stayed healthy from all that walking, you are still outdoors. So I think the book is on so many levels. I love the number 13. I thought that was it was so cool. I thought that was such a good idea. Sometimes a baker's dozen is just perfect. And and then the whole feeling for me, thinking about the trees, thinking about the smell and the sunrises and the sunsets that you get. You don't get it in the city, people. You have to get out there.
I know. Just the moment when he realizes how many stars there are in the sky.
Oh, isn't it wonderful? Isn't it wonderful? Well,
yeah.
Stacy, I think you're fantastic. I think you're a great writer. I'm sure there's more coming along, right?
Yes, there are. There will be two more books in this series, in fact.
Good, because it's just really so enjoyable. And you've gotten great reviews, wonderful comments from people. So again, repeat your website, because I think people can sign up and they can get something, right? A newsletter?
Absolutely. You can get on my newsletter. You'll also get the first three chapters of Wild at Heart when you sign up, so you can check it out and see if it's for you. So, yeah, you can find me at stacygold.com, StacyGold.
And on Facebook, same thing, Stacy Gold.
Yeah, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, I am at author Stacy Gold.
Good. Everybody go there, check it out, get inspired. This is the time. Get out there, have some fresh air, love the trees, hug a tree, and just have fun like Stacy does all the time.
Absolutely. I 100% support that.
Okay. Well, it was great talking to you, Stacy, and I look forward to, as soon as you have the next book, you're going to be back here, okay?
Awesome. I love it. Thank you so much for having me on.
Okay. Bye-bye, Stacy. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, she's so sweet. And go to her website. It's really nice. She's got a great website. She's got she's got a wonderful photo there of herself. She is really so pretty and so cheerful looking and happy. And it's just, oh, just thinking about being out and under the trees makes me happy. There's nothing like a birch tree, I tell you, and my favorite tree in the world. We're going to have some commercials. Then I'm coming back and I'm talking to somebody. Really, it's going to be fun.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you ready to eliminate your home energy bill? Well, get ready to harness the sun. Go EHS, Effective Solar Solutions, by Efficient Home Services. With no upfront costs, you can save money on your utility bill and even eliminate your electric bill altogether with EHS Solar. Call EHS, the number one solar installer nationwide. We know how to customize your home. EHS handles every project in-house with no subcontractors. Remember, no upfront costs, tax breaks, and the best company in the business, Efficient Home Services. Schedule an appointment today at 727-353-3757. Visit our website and download your free buyer's guide to going solar at www.goehs.com. Go solar, go savings, go EHS. Call 727-353-3757 today to talk to our experts.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my next guest, and this is so exciting for me. Oh, I always love to talk to somebody in Hollywood, and so it's really exciting to talk to Joey Hartstone about his, well, it's a debut, I don't know. This book, it's so good, I'm shocked that it's one of the, I don't know if it's his absolute first book. It's called The Local. And Joey Hartstone is an amazing author. Hi, Joey.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, you're going to have such a big head by the time we finish this interview. My goodness, I don't know. Are you a Dodger fan?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if you're going to watch the Dodger. You know, you're going to have to get a bigger cap because I'm going to compliment you so much. Your head's going to burst. What can you?
Oh, thank you.
You're amazing.
I appreciate it.
Wow. This is so much fun. I love this book. I love it in so many ways. It's just, first of all, people could just give me a legal thriller and I would, you know, enjoy it. And then if it was about patent law, I would really enjoy it. And then if there was a murder, I would really, really enjoy it. And if the, well, I don't know if I can tell you who was killed. I don't know if, maybe we don't want to give it away. But I will just say that the person who was killed, okay, is somebody who I wanted to kill because I was involved in a patent lawsuit.
Okay.
In Texas.
Oh, really?
And let's say the person who was killed in your book is the person who I would have killed in my real lawsuit.
Oh.
I would have killed that person with.
Where was it?
It was in Houston. I wish I had been. Okay. I wish we had been where this book is situated. You have to tell us what it means, the local, and about this wonderful story that you came out with, because this is, patent law is very difficult law. Difficult law. I know. I have 4 patents. So when I got this book, I got a kick out of it. Then, of course, the fact that you are a screenwriter gave me an even bigger kick, because as I'm reading it, of course, I looked at it from the point of view. I know it's already, the screenplay is already written in your head. So it's just so wonderful. And your writing is so great. I don't know what to say about it. It's just, what word can I say? Fantastic, amazing.
Well, I think you're the perfect reader for this. I hope that patent law would be somewhat intriguing to people, like they hadn't really read about it before, but I didn't expect someone to be as enthusiastic as you are about that area of law.
Oh, I love it, I love it, I love it. And you have to tell everybody about Marshall, Texas.
Sure. So, yeah, it's this real town in eastern Texas, and about 22 years ago, a new federal judge was appointed, and he changed the rules of his courtroom to entice outsiders to file patent lawsuits here, and it quickly became kind of the biggest area for patent infringement claims. And what happened is big city law firms would come, and they would have out-of-town corporate clients, and they needed a local voice to help talk and communicate to the local juries. And so there's this cottage industry of East Texas lawyers who do this. They do great openings and closings, and they just communicate with the juries in ways that these out-of-town lawyers can't.
The story is incredible, and the character that you developed, the main character, in this story, there are so many elements that you have. It's layered. It has, depth. And I enjoyed that so much. So tell us about your main character and who he is. And I never know how much you want to give away. I love the reveal in the story. I didn't know who was going to get killed. I didn't know, I like that. I like the reveal. So, but you, yeah. You're an expert at pitching, because you're a Hollywood guy. You know what to, you pitch yourself like crazy. So you go ahead and go for it.
Yeah. Well, I liked it. I like doing a slightly slower beginning. It doesn't open with a dead body, but if you do read the book flap, you'll find out who dies. So that was not my call. But yeah, otherwise, it takes a couple chapters, and I kind of wanted you to be introduced to the character and to know him and to care about him before you lose him, and to understand his impact on the community. But basically, the story is about one of these local patent lawyers in East Texas who has an out-of-town client who is as frustrated with this patent litigation as it sounds like you may have been, and he gets accused of murdering someone involved in the patent industry here in Marshall, Texas, and he asks his patent lawyer to defend him for his criminal charges, for his murder charges. So this main character, James Uecker, has to take on his first murder case.
And James Uecker has his baggage that goes with him, so he has depth of character, and a lot of things that go along with him. And then we have some wonderful other characters, and I will mention the client. I guess with a client, we'll call him the client. And when I got to page 33, I love this so much. I was reading this paragraph. I read it twice. I'm going to read a little bit of it.
Please.
I am an innovator. I have spent every day for the past 5 years building a company. I should be devoting every waking hour to making the best possible product. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. I just love this. This paragraph is so cool. When it is on film, and I know they're going to find a great actor for it. It's already it's a part of that film, right?
Yeah, I'm so glad you like that character, because there have been some people who just sort of describe him as angry, and he is angry because he's being sued for patent infringement that he doesn't believe has occurred, and he's being sued in this place that he's never heard of. So in my opinion, he has every right to be angry.
Yeah, because that's, see, I relate to him. To him because I am an innovator, and I spent every day of 5 years. And so I know how this guy feels, and I was not upset at all with what he did, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
You know, it's
that makes me happy. There's just been a lot of people who have said, "Well, I just really don't like him. He's angry all the time." Like, he's supposed to be angry. He is being wronged right now.
Listen, honey, I'm still angry, and it's been 20 years since I went through that hell, and I'm still angry. So you know, when you created something and you know it's yours and you've done it, and then somebody comes along and steals it, the anger actually never leaves. You know, it doesn't. And so I love this guy.
Yeah. Well, it's funny what you're talking about. I talked to some lawyers who actually do this, and they, you know, I said, well, how do you communicate intellectual property law to people on the jury who've never really thought much about it? Because who would think about intellectual property law? And one of the lawyers said, you just talk about it like it's any other property rights, because we all understand what it feels like when you have something and someone else takes it from you, and you just translate that emotion.
And that's exactly it. It's the same emotion I know that my father felt many years earlier when somebody stole his company, his lumber company. So when I had my patent stolen, I knew. Now, unfortunately, I could not go to Marshall because I was suing the government.
Okay.
And then you're in a different ball game.
That's a big
Christmas suit. And then you're in federal court in Houston. So you're in a different courtroom. That's why I love this book. I mean, just all throughout the book, you know, you talk patent law in a nice way so that, you know, people who don't know it will really appreciate learning about it, I think. You blend it all in with everything else, with all the excitement, the adventure, the love, the everything.
Oh, great. Yeah, I found the patent law aspect pretty fascinating, but it's only so much of the book, because I figured if I wrote an entire novel about patent law, people might put it down at some point.
Well, you have a murder, and you have a few other things to deal with here.
Yes. Yeah, and it's kind of like your classic fish out of water, where you have this lawyer who's never practiced this type of law, and so he makes some mistakes along the way as he becomes a criminal defense attorney.
And he has lessons to learn just from his life has depths of problems.
Yeah. Well, I like to get, when I heard what these people do, it sort of struck me as a rather superficial profession. If you're not even really getting into the nitty-gritty of law, you're just giving these folksy openings and closing arguments. So I thought, okay, well, that's how he should present himself, but let's have him have more depth, and let's take a little while to dig into it. But the further you read, hopefully the more you feel like he's a well-formed character.
Exactly. He is. Now, as a somebody who as a script writer, and I, you know, I didn't mention that you're famous, you know.
No.
Yeah, you know, not everybody has worked with Carl Reiner and had two films done. And do you want to tell us a little bit about your script writing business?
Yeah, I moved out to L.A. in, I don't know, 2005. With dreams of becoming a screenwriter. So it took a quick 10 years. And then I was lucky enough to have a movie made called LBJ, which starred Woody Harrelson and was directed by Rob Reiner. And that kind of started my career. So I got to write a couple movies, and then I've worked on The Good Fight, and now I'm working on a show on Showtime called Your Honor.
Well, you know, you are very accomplished. And in the business, you know, it's a great accomplishment, you know, what you've done. And you've worked with some wonderful, wonderful people. And now, of course, now, you know, the people always are asking me, novelists are always asking me, well, I'm going to write a script. Or they'll tell me, I've written a script in my book. And then I just want to mention that I was also in Hollywood for a very short time. Well, not very short time, but I was there three of my spec scripts were optioned, and they appeared in the Hollywood Reporter, which I am so grateful that they appeared in a full-page ad in the Hollywood Reporter, because that's all my dad ever got to see. You know, he lived long enough to see that. He didn't live long enough to see the movies made, and he would still be waiting around because they went into turnaround. And I will mention this, too. I was involved. I get myself in a mess. I was involved in a lawsuit in Hollywood, too.
You're quite litigious.
Yes. And open my big mouth. You know, I should have learned, because then I was very young, and I sued a famous Hollywood person and their studio. That doesn't go well.
No.
That never goes well.
Did they steal an idea from you?
More than that. What the heck? They took the whole script. But the funny thing is, the lawyer I got was 6 months out of law school. So it didn't work out well. But I appreciate what you've done here. Sometimes people will say, well, a script writer can not make a great novelist. But I think that's not true. A script writer can make a great novelist. Few novelists can make a great script writer, because they don't know how to do it. They don't know how to cut those most of the book apart.
Yeah, there's so many more rules and parameters in screenwriting. So I feel like writing a book is much more liberating. And I think that people who write novels sometimes find trying to write a screenplay to be too confining, and it's frustrating to them. And I understand that.
Well, it's for most of them, it's impossible. They cannot get into it, and they're so in love with every word they've written in a book that they don't understand that sometimes in the script you can only use. I did adapt a book for a script, and at the end, you know, the author came to me, and he was very nice, very, very, very sweet guy, and he said, "You only used 120 words from the book." And I said, "Yeah, but those were the best 120 words."
Yeah.
I mean,
I think, yeah, that's, I think, like, famously, the movie adaptation won Best Adapted Screenplay, and the movie isn't adapted from the book. It's about Charlie Kaufman trying to adapt the book. And so it has no relation, really, to the book at all, but that's how it goes a lot of the time.
So, I don't know if they've optioned this one yet. Have they picked it up?
Yes.
Is it optioned?
I've been working. So both the TV shows I've worked on have been executive produced by Robert and Michelle King, who created The Good Wife. And so, and then the president of their company, Liz Glosser, is the person I've worked with on many projects. So I'm collaborating with them yet again, and we're hoping to take this project out and try to sell it.
Oh, it'll sell. It'll sell. It is going to be so much fun. One, because of the location, being in Marshall, and the fact that you're going to have, you've developed, I mean, you're a cinematic person. You've developed already the characters. And boy, oh boy, the casting is going to be so much fun. There are going to be people just, are they starting to wine and dine you all the...
No, never.
Well, I think they're going to start wining and dining you, because I would think there would be some actors who would just die for... There's a couple of roles in here. You know, the main role, of course, is a walk-away winner. I mean, it's just... It's fantastic. And then, but the other roles too, you've made the characters rich, and you've given them great lines to do.
Yeah. Oh, good.
So, you know, it's going to be easy to translate this into a film that's really going to read well. You know, actors will love it, and you're going to have fun with this.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so.
You have any actors in mind for your...
Yeah, I try so hard to not picture an actor for the main roles of anything I write, even if it's a screenplay, because I never want to be let down, and I also don't want to get into my mind a certain type, and then you find out you get a great actor who's not exactly what you imagine, and you have to change the character, and so the more married you are to that, the harder your job becomes.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the best way, because it's surprising. You know, sometimes it just, somebody will come along, and although they're not exactly what you pictured, they just... can walk away with it. It's all a matter of attitude. But boy, being able to have that you know, I think people do like that Texas accent. And I think some actors going to just love this. Well, quite a few of them are going to love these parts.
I hope so. Yeah, there's so many actors from Texas, too. I've Googled that many times. And even if we were exclusive to Texas actors, I think we'd have a lot of great ones to choose from. So I hope so.
But I like also that you have smaller characters. I hope that, you know, when you do the script, I like in the old Hollywood, where you have the minor characters. They might only say a few words, you know, but it's... They give substance, they give depth to a film. So I hope that you incorporate that, because even the jurors' comment.
Yeah.
You know, I want you to keep that in there. I don't need a copy of that. I mean, all of this little stuff makes for, it's made the book interesting, and then it'll make the film interesting. You have to keep these little gems that you've come out with, and you have them scattered throughout the book, because you are just a great writer.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, it's obviously cliche to say, but I think the location is definitely a character in this, and it's interesting that this is a real place, and it's a small town, so it's different than the places you'd imagine major companies get sued. Yeah, I think it's interesting.
Well, it is. It is. And as I said, the one of the main characters, the one I relate to, an inventor, I feel the passion, and I'm going to...
I feel yours.
because it's going to be some actor. I always like to make actors happy, you know, when they get a part and they say, that's something great. So you've done that for these, for all your characters.
Oh, cool.
Wow. I just, when you're ready to release the film, you're going to come back here. Are you going to do this as a series? What are you going to do with this character?
I want to pitch it as a TV series. And then I would like to write more installments of this book. So I hope I get the opportunity to do that. I definitely have some other cases brewing in my mind that I think James could take. So I would love to revisit these characters in every way.
Well, I think so, too. I think James is great. And, I don't know if they're going to, like, do a streaming first, a movie, and then take it off to a series. You can do there's so much you can do with patent law, and so much you can do with these characters. And, you know, every scene doesn't have to take place in Marshall either. So there's a lot of depth here. You've built in. You're a clever, clever. Screenwriters can be very clever. Plan ahead, right?
Yes, exactly.
and you've done it. And I think, you deserve so many compliments. And I'm really so thrilled. I love the book, absolutely love the book. And I also love the book because the cover is yellow, and I love yellow covers. I don't know why more people don't use yellow covers, because I had a yellow Hummer. And I unfortunately gave it up during the last crisis of petrol crisis. Well, I lived in England a long time. I call it petrol gas crisis. Luckily, I don't have it now because.
Yes.
Oh boy, I can't imagine.
Yes.
Anyway, how are things out there? Are things crazy, price wise?
They're a little. I think so, yeah. I think we hit like $7. We have an extra dollar tax on every gallon of gas in California. So whatever the national average is, just add a dollar.
Oh, wow. That's insane. Well, you know, I always love to talk to somebody in Hollywood. Fond memories, mostly fond memories.
Yeah.
And now I can laugh about it. But I just want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper. Do you have a website you want people to go to? Joey, I love Joey. I love that name.
Oh, thank you.
I think it's so cool. There aren't many Joeys anymore. And I think it's just a cool name. And you sound like a Joey. I love that.
Oh, good. I just never matured into Joe or Joseph. So I just kept the childhood nickname, I guess.
Yeah, well, you've got that in your voice. I don't know.
Okay.
Sort of a delightful, charming, child.
Oh, thank you.
Joey Hartstone. I love the name. And you didn't make that up, right? Hartstone is real.
I did not. That's my name.
Joey Hartstone.
Somewhere it got changed from Hartstein, I would imagine.
Yeah, well, it's meant to be.
Yeah.
Hartstone. Okay, Joey, I think you're terrific. And you're going to come back on when they're going to announce the release of the movie or streaming video or whatever. Will you come back on and talk more about
it?
My listeners would love me to ask you questions about script writing, because some of them just won't give up. They just live in hope that they shouldn't. You know, everybody should live in hope. And you lived in hope. You got, you know, you had your 10 years in Hollywood. I didn't have the nerves to last that long. And anyway, they kicked me out of the state.
Yeah, I didn't feel like moving.
Yeah, they said, get out of the state, you know. But it's absolutely wonderful. So your website is Joey Hartstone?
Yep, joeyhartstone.com.
And on social media and all that?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at JCHartstone.
People, get this book. It's called The Local. It's got a yellow cover. You can't miss it. It's really great. I love this. It's got the Ford on the cover. And that's a part of the story. A brilliant story by a brilliant author, new novelist author, who's going to make a hit movie. Thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today, Joey.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye.
Wow, this book is good. It is good. It is amazing. I love this book. I almost could have read it in one go. I was just enthralled with it. And it is called The Local. Okay, so that, you know, here we have two great books for wonderful summer reading. And I hope that all of you people will get out there and read. And please, my goodness, did you know that 50% of Americans read only at an eighth grade level? This is incredible. I have to go on some kind of a mission or some kind of a project or some kind of a something or the other, where I have to find these 50% of people who can't read and get them reading. Anyway, but here at Joy on Paper, we read and we read and we read. And I have a pile of books. I came into the studio and Ed is sitting behind this pile of books. It's incredible. Anyway, I have to carry them all out. Oh, my goodness. I think there must be 7, 8 books, and I'm getting this almost every day. Anyway, people, remember what I always tell you. One of the joys of life is to hear your words on paper. Not to hear your words on paper, to see your words on paper. See, I get so excited talking to somebody in Hollywood. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, to hear them spoken in an audible book, or to, if you're very, very lucky, to hear the magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or a series on the Hallmark Channel, like I am hoping for Carol J. Perry. And the more I think about it, I want her Haunted Haven series to be on the Hallmark Channel, because that's set right here in our area. It will be so fantastic to have a series right here in just in St. Petersburg, Clearwater area. It is such a gorgeous place. And Carol J. Perry has a new book out. It's Till Death, and that's in her other series, Witch City. So anyway, I have to say something nice to Big Ed in the control room, and I want to thank him. He saluted me. I saluted him, and I'm saluting all of you. Oh, and I see Bobby. Oh, Bobby just came in. Okay, everybody, have a wonderful, wonderful day. Bye-bye.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Rocket Mortgage.
I'm Steve Kathan. Graphic video and testimony of the Florida penalty trial of the Parkland.